A note to listeners, the following podcast contains content that may not be suitable for all audiences.
There's a lot of stories, there's a lot of theories, there's a lot of information out there, but when you start getting down to what can we prove, what facts are out there, there's not very many. It's all in the beginning. That's where it stops. And why does it stop there? Because nothing was done right away afterwards.
You are listening to Partners in True Crime. We are your hosts, Rob and Cindy Dorfman.
Today we have Jody Barth again on the podcast to help us discuss some information that was released by someone this week online that points to a possible suspect in the case of Molly and Colt.
To be clear, this information is not new to us. We have been discussing this information with local law enforcement for months and agreed not to release it because they asked us not to, due to the sensitivity of the information and for the safety of the law enforcement individuals investigating it.
So let's get on the phone with Jody and unpack some of this information.
So let's get this started. We got Jody Barth on the podcast today. There's been a lot of information floating around down in Oklahoma in the past couple weeks. And actually, it's been floating around for a while. We've been kind of sitting on a lot of the information, but because nothing has been vetted out yet, but wanted to talk about it a little bit. We kind of told you a little bit about it a couple weeks ago that was unrelated, but it is kind of related. But just wanted to start off by saying there's been a blog that's out there that's been put out that is basically stating that what it in the blog is everything is fact in that. So we wanted to just talk a little bit about that and talk about what the blog is saying. Other than that, I mean, we've all read this blog and some of the information is correct. Some of the information is still up for question, but we wanted to talk about it at least to give it its due diligence. Jody, you read some of it and based upon what you know in the case right now, and what do you think?
What I think is I basically agreed with one statement in the blog, and that was that the reason the search warrant was not accepted was because it lacked allegation of a crime. That's about the only thing that I saw in that blog that I really agreed with.
The search warrant you're talking about that Jackie Bates put
Jackie
forth?
Jackie Bates search warrant.
Yeah, yeah, right. The one for the property. For the
right,
the creek.
Yeah, right. That's what I saw when I looked at it the first time. And I thought it was, you know, pretty well written, a lot of information in it. But you have to allege a crime and you can't just insinuate a crime by looking for human remains. You have to take it to this. You have to take it that extra step and allege a crime has been committed. And that wasn't in there. So in my opinion, that was the only thing that stopped that. And you have to give the probable cause for why you think that. So, you know, that was missing. But other than that, I just saw a lot. You know, that this case is, we're going on what? You're going on 10 years now, yeah. Almost 10 years. And it's very short on facts. There's a lot of stories, there's a lot of theories, there's a lot of information out there, but when you start getting down to what can we prove, what facts are out there, there's not very many.
No, that's what we've said from the beginning, is that there's been so much speculation in this case that it's become an urban legend. I mean, really. I mean, the only thing that's been consistent is that Khan was in a high-speed chase with police. Molly and Colt were in the car. Khan went into the woods. Molly and Colt never came out, and Khan did.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's all in the beginning. And there's where it stops. And why does it stop there? Because nothing was done right away afterwards.
That's the other fact, is that law enforcement didn't take it seriously. They didn't follow up on the car chase. They basically took Joe's word for it that they were runaways and they went to Wichita City. And so no one really did anything. So, and as we all know, those first crucial moments in crimes are the most important. And it gave time for evidence to be diluted, for people's stories to change. And like we said before, you know, we just feel like the people that were initially involved in the beginning, Khan, Joe, and we're not even sure about Colby, but definitely Khan knows, we feel like he knows more than what he's telling. And that's all we've been saying throughout this whole thing. I mean, even Paula admitted saying she doesn't think Khan did anything. He doesn't think like he killed Molly. But she knows, he knows something. And I think, and that's one of the things that was really interesting about this, you know, this blog that was created by someone that came onto the podcast, and we gave them information.
Well,
and
he reached out to me first. So I thought it was really interesting that he came to me first. He came to me first thinking I was going to just immediately give him the information, and I turned him over to Rob. And then he said he wanted to come on the podcast.
Yeah. And we had him on the podcast, and he made some valid points legally. But at the same point, we felt like, you know, after the fact, he had an ulterior motive. And maybe that he feels like he wanted to solve this crime, which is fine. We don't care who solves the crime. We don't care who did it, as long as they find who did it. That's always been the case. And what we've been doing from day one is putting out information that's already been out there.
Everything we've put out there has a legal stamp on it. Okay. Khan has been arrested. He is a convicted felon. Correct?
Right.
Yep.
Yes.
Colby Barrick, yes. Convicted felon. Correct?
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Joe Russell, grand jury.
Well, yeah, his grand jury. The only reason he didn't take it to the next level is, and they didn't, they said one or two things that happened. They said they didn't have enough charges against him. We've heard two stories. The other story is that if they went to, he resigned because he didn't want to go to a trial and risk that, even though he felt like he was innocent. But it's always a 50-50 chance.
My point is, when we filmed the documentary, he said, F the family. Now, I don't care who you are. If you have a good bone in your body, you're not going to say F the family to a family that has been looking for their missing loved one for the past 10 years.
Right, right.
So these aren't like church-going, wonderful, good people. I'm sorry. We saw straight up face-to-face with this guy, and he said, F the family.
Yeah. So the contention is in this blog is that Joe Russell is a good person, and he was good at his job. If that was the case, when we started this podcast, when we went down to Oklahoma and Love County, no one had a nice thing to say about Joe. In fact, when we started the podcast, people in the Love County Sheriff's Department were calling us and emailing us, giving us information. And this was after the fact. This is after he's gone, telling us what's going on and what he was doing. So it's still, obviously, this is all hearsay, but it begs the question that it does reflect on his character and his the fact that he was in office for 16 years and there was a lot of things that may or may not have happened that people were involved in. And we can't really speak to that. All we did was we're putting out information that people are giving to us.
And that's already legal. It's already proven information.
As far as Joe Russell's concerned, I mean, I know he was given a glowing background, a glowing report in that blog. But from a law enforcement standpoint, I can tell you the fact that he called off that chase does not really bother me per se, because law enforcement agencies call off high-speed chases all the time. I mean, they might have an internal procedure that they follow, but generally it's based on certain criteria that you know going ahead of time. Mostly it's the factors that are involved. The safety is always first, pedestrian and traffic, vehicular safety. So if you've got high traffic, you're probably going to call off the chase. Weather conditions, you're probably going to call off the chase, depending. I mean, you look at all those things. But in this particular case, I mean, there was no weather problem. There was no traffic problem. What there was, and I will give them this, Khan Nip has patterns that he follows, and he knows, and he heads for the gravel roads. And he does that because it throws up a smoke screen. It throws up gravel. It's dangerous for the people that are chasing him. And so there was a legitimate concern there for the safety of the officers and the safety of the squad cars. I get that. But even if he called off the chase, that's one thing. But they knew who was in that car, and he did not send officers to the house to wait for him. He didn't go himself. And the other thing he did that is very unusual is he did not call off that chase through dispatch, so that you have a recording of it. It's out in the open. in this particular case, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, but he called off this chase by a personal phone call.
Correct.
As far as that's what we've been told, which makes sense.
Exactly. And I think he probably did, because I think I've heard recordings of the dispatch, and I didn't hear anybody calling off the stage.
No, we had the dispatch operator on, and we went through the whole entire call, and it's not on there. So,
right.
If he didn't call off the chase, who did?
But there were deputies that worked for him that told us he called off the chase.
Exactly.
Right, right. So, I mean, there's a lot of things he did and didn't do that would be questionable for any law enforcement officer to do, but he's a cousin to this suspect. And there's a higher duty, I guess, because of the conflict of interest perception that's out there, that you'd think he would have followed up on that right away, but he didn't. And I mean, we've seen that how many times? How many cars, stolen cars, have been taken? Has he and Jim Diggs taken off of the NIP property? And no charges were filed, because they always say, we don't know how they got here. Yeah. I mean, it's incredible to put that he's been forthcoming and he's done everything he can do is a joke, right?
Yeah.
It's a joke. Even the Oklahoma Highway Patrol said it, and I have a copy of it right here. I was just doing some research and I saw this article. It was written January 21st, 2014. In a News9.com article, and it was following Khan's arrest for the high-speed chase in his father's pickup, where he tried to outrun two troopers, and he had just been arrested like 2 weeks before that for the chase on the night that Molly and Colt disappeared. They were interviewing Ronnie Howard, Captain Howard.
Hampton?
Hampton, I'm sorry, yes. And his quote was, every car chase with him, meaning Khan, has been a blatant disregard for anybody else's property and anybody else that may be traveling on those roads. Very dangerous person. And then he also said that every time investigators had tried to question Nip about the pursuits or Molly Miller's disappearance, he had refused to talk. So right there, I mean, he's saying that Khan Nip wasn't cooperating. He wasn't talking to people.
Well, he talked to Joe. Like, Joe went up to his place, and we have the report here hanging up on our wall, and it was July 23rd, 2013, right. a good couple weeks after they went missing, when in fact he should have been down there that night.
He should have been down there that night, or at least his deputies should have been down there that night. It wasn't like they didn't know where he was going.
Or even if it wasn't, if he crossed the county line, somebody, you know, because it was Wilson Police Department, somebody should have been at, because everyone knew it was Khan.
Right.
I mean, why not just show up at their doorstep?
Exactly. That's what, I guarantee you, that's what most departments would have done. In fact, I know from reading the reports, the Wilson, I mean, they had somebody back at Sabrina's house thinking that they might come back there.
Right. So they didn't have anybody at Khan's house, because they just ignored Khan because he was related to Joe Russell. And Joe Russell also told Maureen Kane, who worked at one of the news reporters from the area, that, oh, they're missing. They ran away. They're runaways. She called that night and said immediately, what's going on with these kids? And he was like, don't worry about them. They're just runaways. They're off in, you know, they ran off to whatever part of Texas or whatever. I mean, he started these rumors from the get-go.
Right.
Why would you do that? You're not investigating it.
Yeah.
Right. He did not investigate it.
I mean, the misinformation in this case started when they didn't go question Khan immediately. Because when you don't, because then people are making up all these other stories and people are hearing, we don't know what's true. We don't know what's not true. And then no one was following this case. They were potentially investigating it. But obviously, if they were doing their job, Paula wouldn't have gotten involved.
Exactly.
Paula wouldn't have hired a private investigator.
And she wouldn't have to be tortured by this for the past 10 years. No family member should have to go through what Paula's been through.
Yeah.
So, right, right.
But
I mean, they lied, a bunch of them lied or stayed silent right from the beginning of this. But I mean, when Sabrina finally reported the car stolen at 6:30 the next morning, she lied right from the get-go about it. And she did her time for that, but she wasn't alone in that. There was a conspiracy going on, I believe, because of the phone records. I mean,
No, I agree.
And I can go right down the line, you know, and knock them out one at a time as far as her lies about that.
Yeah.
Throughout the night, I counted them up, and not counting the calls and texts between just like Jennifer and Con, which there were many, the calls and texts between Sabrina, Jennifer, Melissa Greenroyd, and Con had a few of them in there. There was over 150. 150.
Right. And so they didn't know what was going on. What were they talking about? I mean, it's ridiculous. And the fact that when Paula and her family, who knew the Nips, they knew them. They knew them for their whole lives.
Related.
They're related. They went over there and they asked, can we look and see if Molly is here? And they would not let them back there. Now, you tell me why.
Well, they're saying that they did. And according to this blog, that they said that they allowed them, as far as what Paula was saying, is that the one time, and I think this was like a year later, pretty decent about they went and they paraded them in the back near the dog pen because there was a rumor about the dog pen and that it was just freshly, you know, made with cement and stuff like that. So there were efforts there, but at the same point, according to all of law enforcement and the outside law enforcement agencies that are now looking at this, they said they looked at all those searches and they basically said those searches weren't performed properly.
Go back to this again, though. This is people that are related to Molly. Like, they know her, okay? Why wouldn't they help?
Why wouldn't the people...
The Nips help Molly's family find Molly if Con was the last person to see her in the car?
Right.
Why?
Exactly. And they knew it. They were up all night, other than for... It was less than 2.5 hours of downtime that they weren't communicating.
Now, if you're telling me you're a Christian, God-fearing person, my neighbor comes to me and says, I need your help. I run outside and I help my neighbor. I can't imagine if it was someone I was related to, who I knew, and my kid was the last person to be in the car with them.
Right. Even look when Rob Nichols and Benita and Devin, and I don't know, I can never remember who the fourth one is, but when they confront Con, and he eventually, after trying to deny it, he eventually tells them that he left him where he and Rob left the silver Mustang. When Rob asked him if he could cut through their property to get there, Con refused.
Yeah.
That's my point.
I know.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, here's the thing. We know all of that is fact. All that stuff we know is fact.
It's in the police reports. This is all fact. This is not hearsay or conjecture or our opinion or our thoughts. These are facts.
Yeah. And then that left, because of that void in the investigation, that's when Paula started getting messages from people. Right. And a lot of those messages she recorded, and we played some of them on the podcast. A lot of them we haven't. But we felt that, you know, it was important for people to understand what's going on, because no one was really talking about it. Even after we did the documentary, no one was really talking about this case.
No.
They just wanted it to go away. And even though law enforcement, OSBI at that time had a case open on that, it was a cold case. There was nothing. The only active stuff that they were getting was the leads that Paula was sending to them. And we do know now that they were vetting out those leads. They just weren't telling Paula and were being transparent about what the results of those leads were. So we found that. We just recently found that out, by the way. And that's part of the whole purpose of this podcast, is to keep information out there, keep this case out there so people are talking about it, whether it's good or bad. And that's when this person we were introduced to, who came here, who's a lawyer, and they had some valid points, but we also found out afterwards that they're probably biased to a certain degree, because they're friends with the Nips and they're friends with the current prosecutor's office and stuff like that, because they hired him and stuff like that. So there is a little bit of a bias there. Now, whether that has to come into play, no one knows. No one knows, but there is a bias there. Yeah. And then that gets us to the point where his truth doc is a little bit interesting, because right now there are no truths. The only truths are of what we just talked about, is the first 24 hours, the first few hours of this case. So, and now they're coming out, and this is something that we've known for a while. And one of the things that, you know, when we talked to Jackie Bates reached out to us after his warrant got denied. He came on the podcast. He was troubled with the way this investigation was going. He felt like he was getting thwarted, and he was, to a degree. So, but he kept on going besides that. And he started to find some information out. Some of it where he thought that someone would have done it. He was like hell-bent, and he was zero focused on one particular person. Turned out to not to be that person. So then he found out some other information about another person. And so as he got closer to this, we were talking to him. To be perfectly honest, if you want to know how many times we were talking to Jackie probably 3 times a week for the past year. Okay, wow. So that's
hours.
How often, and we're talking hours.
Hours.
Not hours. Hours. Hours and hours and hours.
Right.
And he was sharing information. We would share information. And then he had some other information that was coming out. And then after that, he was looking into. And then at one point, he wanted to talk to the person that did the blog. And so we were like, we're all about transparency. Let's find out what's going on here. We actually shared a lot of the information with the person who came on the podcast, who did the blog. And we heard them out. Didn't necessarily agree with everything he was saying, but he was making a good case on certain things. So,
but he also got very aggressive with us after the fact, which I didn't particularly care for. He was sending, what's the word I'm looking for?
Harassing.
Yeah. He started harassing us after we allowed this person to come on the podcast and speak his truth and gave him a forum. We actually shared information with him that he actually is now using as part of his arsenal.
Truth doc.
His truth doc. And then he started harassing us, sending crazy texts all night long, threatening little texts and little faces and, you know, trying to scare us and bully us. It didn't work.
One of the things that happened is he started telling us what Jackie told him as part of his theory. And Jackie started telling us about this one person, alleged person that could have done it, done the killing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were like, wow, that's really interesting. And so we started talking about that. And we never mentioned it on the podcast. And we've known this information for quite a while. And one of the things that Jackie said, please don't put this out on the...
And we didn't.
We honored him because he goes, listen, I'm out there. I'm in danger. I'm doing this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but this particular person who wrote the blog had no problems sending it to us. And, you know, I immediately sent that to Jackie. And I said, listen, I know you don't want this out there. I just want to let you know this is out there. And he said, please don't put that out there. And so he was working with the OSBI at the time.
Right.
So, and they were both very pleased that we didn't put that out there because they haven't had it fully vetted out. And
right.
That right there still hasn't been fully vetted out. That theory.
And yet this person is putting it out there as if it's the truth.
Exactly.
And they're already convicting a person in the eye of public opinion that this person is guilty before this person has even been charged or tried for anything to do with this.
Yeah. Right. When you say you have proof, and those are his words,
mm-hmm.
he said he had proof. That's a huge statement. I mean, that's a pretty big statement to make.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we really trust anything that's going to happen down there at this point?
There's a lot of things going on down there. Okay. And if it wasn't for the podcast, none of this stuff would have surfaced. So, you know, we're getting information out there. It's eliciting other information. Bad, good, or indifferent. He's going to say that we're telling everybody that, you know, Con, Colby, and Joe, they are the ones that killed. We never said that. We just said that we know that they probably know more than they're telling everybody, and that they were involved in those first moments.
Right.
So that's all we can do.
Right. And we've never said who killed them. We don't know. Exactly. But we do know, like you said, we do know certain facts, and they all stem from that night, from July 7th into the 8th, and then they drop away.
Yeah.
But this investigation is a much bigger investigation than one person can handle. I mean, look how long it took me just to do the phone
analysis.
Merging.
I know. You were on that for months.
Months. I mean, it just takes an enormous amount of time, and you really need people to bounce things off of.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I've had the opportunity now to go through it again and again for certain specific information, and I see different things all the time that are starting to create a much broader picture of what went on for those hours, during those hours.
And I find it interesting because in the blog, he talks about not having tunnel vision. And it sounds like he's been having tunnel vision from day one. But right. at the same point, you don't have any proof yet. You don't have an right. admission. You have a couple people who are talking about druggies who he say they're not reliable. A lot of these testimonies that based upon his blog that are from people who have extensive criminal and drug backgrounds.
Right.
So he discounted most of the stuff that we put out there saying that those are just all druggies. You can't consider with anything they say.
Exactly.
So it's like, who do you consider? Who's the good witness? Your witness that's telling you what you want to hear, or the witness that you don't believe? So it's, right. you know, you gotta figure out what works and what doesn't work. But the bottom line is, with this case, now this information out there, now they're targeting Colt's brother, Jesse.
Right.
We interviewed Jesse for the doc. It didn't make it into the doc because the doc, we had to cut some time out and his interview got shortened. But we have that interview. So he was the only one from Colt's family who came out and spoke on camera about Colt. So I thought that was interesting. Now,
yes.
who knows what happened? Who knows what transpired between Jesse and Colt? We heard they didn't have a great relationship. You know, right. There's a lot of families that don't have siblings, don't have great relationships. Does that make him a person who can actually do this? Who knows? We don't know. Nobody knows. The only people that know are the people that did it. But as far as this person who wrote the blog saying that he's been working extensively with Jackie, as far as Jackie is concerned, and we've asked him this numerous times, he said, no. He goes, I'm not working with him. He goes, I used him to get information so I can get an interview with Khan. I got that, and I got some other information. That's all it was. And he also said that both him and the OSBI said they feel like they overshared with him because they were not prepared for this information to come out the way it did. Now, whether or not that's the truth or not, that's what he's saying. Because it's getting a lot of blowback, and because I don't know if everybody's ready to handle this information. Now, but it's too late now. It's out there. And so you got to talk about it.
The fact is that we did interview Jesse a few years ago.
You interviewed him.
I interviewed him, actually.
Yeah.
And I felt like he knew more than what he was telling me. I pressed him a few times and I kept saying, do you know more than you're saying? I can't disregard that Jesse could be involved in this. I can't say that he's not. I can't say that he is. But he definitely felt to me like he knew more than what he was saying. Now,
as did a lot of people that we talked to.
And I have to say, I was just about to say that, he's not the only one. I mean, every person that we've talked to in this case, they're holding something back and you can see it and you can feel it. And you as an investigator, you would know in a second.
Right.
And I think that Jesse was the only one who came to be interviewed. I tried to interview the rest of the family. Nobody would talk to me. None of the sisters or anyone. He was the only one that came. And, you know, he talked about his drug problem and his substance abuse problem and his problems with the law and his drugs and how he couldn't stop dealing drugs and doing drugs, and he felt bad, but he loved his brother and he wanted to do right by him. That is what he told us, or me. Mm-hmm. I spent hours with him in the kitchen trying to feel him out.
Mm-hmm.
And I still don't feel like they have the smoking gun with Jesse, because if they did, it would have already been out there. This is, you know, it wouldn't be too hard to pin it on somebody who's already gotten arrested and who is a felon and who has a drug past. And I thought that druggies' testimonies don't count because the eyewitness was a druggie. So his testimony doesn't count, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I know.
That's what they said. That's what he said.
I just think it's infuriating when it's hypocritical like that. You know, you're going to use the testimony of this person, but not this person, even though they're both druggies, because this person's going to benefit me, not you. And all we're trying to do here is just put all of the information out there. We're not making a judgment either way.
Exactly.
Right. Well, you have to admit that in the beginning, there were only three people. Three people knew that Molly and Colt were out there in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Khan, Colt, and Molly. And Khan left them there. And he went back home, I believe. He went back home. And I can't believe he didn't share that information, but whether he did or he didn't, there's a huge disconnect as to how Jesse would have gotten involved.
Yeah.
Right? So somebody has to be in between that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And would Khan really, for 10 years, you're telling me the Knipp family, if they knew that Jesse was involved in this, that Jesse did this, they're going to protect him for 10 years? not say anything?
Yeah.
Right.
Does that make any sense to anybody?
No. No. And you can't, from what I've heard since I've been involved, I think that there's, I can't articulate this properly. I can't imagine that there isn't a lot of people who know what happened, or several people who know what happened.
Of course.
This is a small town. Everybody knows everything.
And I felt that with Jesse too. He knew what happened. I think he knows exactly what happened to his brother. Did he kill his brother? I don't know.
But
I didn't feel it.
Well,
that's my point. I mean, if they're trying to say that one of the theories that we've heard, which I think is absolutely ridiculous, is that he killed Colt because he was jealous because he was with Molly. I mean, come on. He was with Molly for a week.
No. That's not. It's because he went after Colt had sex with his girlfriend. I think I'm not going to say her name, but Jesse's girlfriend. He was upset about that, and he threatened to kill him or stab him, stuff like that. And,
okay, yeah, that's something.
Those two used to get into fights all the time.
Or that he disrespected Molly.
Disrespected him. He apparently, from what we know, and this is from pretty reliable sources within that family, that Jesse never met Molly.
He told me he'd never met Molly. He told me he didn't know Molly.
Yeah.
And that kind of lines up with what he said to Cindy. So, but. Right.
It just doesn't. I'm trying to picture, where did he find Colt? Where did he go out there? Did Colt call him? We don't know if Colt called him. If we don't know the number, maybe he's one of those unknown numbers that we have. I don't know. But I'm trying to figure out, how would they even get together? There's got to be another.
Listen, there may be. There's probably more information that we know. Obviously, there's so much more information that we don't know.
Right.
You know, the files that just Paula has alone. They would choke a dinosaur. So I can't imagine the police files on this are like probably 10 times as much. You know, that's one of the things that when the BI took on the case, that was the biggest concern for us, is that they have to go through all that information. They're still going through it, and it's like, and they're still trying to work an active case. And it's got to be torturous to kind of go through all that information. And then at the same time, getting all new tips and leads and stuff like that you have to follow up on. And that was one of the things I wanted to talk about with the blog, is that they're saying that, you know, all these leads that the law enforcement had to chase, these false leads, you don't know they're false leads until you
I mean, you how do you feel out. About that, Jody?
You got to check.
Exactly.
Tell me, from a law enforcement perspective, I don't care how many false leads you get, you have to check them out, correct?
You have to check them out, and you have to check them out without blinders on. You can't get ahead of yourself when you're doing that. You have to check them out as if everybody's on the same level. I mean, you and I both know we all have preconceptions. We're all human, even if we're police officers or not. But you have to put that aside. So they have to check all those out as if they believe every word of it from the beginning.
And that's from your years of an investigator, right?
Yeah. I mean, you have to do that, and you have to just start. And I'm not saying it's easy. There's a lot of times you have to talk to yourself very seriously about whether or not you're looking at something from an investigative standpoint, from an outsider standpoint, or if you're forming preconceptual ideas of your own values in your head. And judging somebody not based on what they say or not based on what the truth is, but what you're looking at or what you're seeing, you know, what. And we have to do that all the time. And sometimes we're not so good at it.
Yeah.
You know, so I really cringed when I read and heard him talk about the fact that a lot of these people were addicts, they had addiction and substance abuse and all of that. I don't care. That's like saying you're judging a murdered prostitute because she was a prostitute. You can't do that. It's a murder.
And independent of you, we've had other law enforcement officials, inspectors, and people, and detectives who said some of their best leads come from those sources.
Well, yeah, they're there. They know what's going on. We don't. It's tough. It's not an easy thing to do. But if you just keep the blinders off and you just check it out, you can usually validate or dismiss something fairly easy. It's not that difficult to do that, but you have to take the time to do that.
And as far as we know, based upon the law enforcement we've been speaking to as well, is that they're still a lot of suspects in this. No one's, you know, I mean, this blog basically says that his friends are cleared, Con, Joe, and Colby. Mm. But according to what we spoke to, when Jackie was telling me, when he got the interview that was set up by this person, mm-hmm. and we got an email from that person saying, harassing email saying, the client has been cleared and you're going to have egg on your face, yada, yada, yada. And according to Jackie, he still has doubts. He has doubts about a lot of things until that's what you have to do as an investigator. You have to have doubts about everything. So everyone's still on the table, regardless if they feel like they got a bullseye on Jesse right now. And who knows? I mean, Jesse's sitting in a jail cell right now for a crime that has nothing to do with this. You know, he was charged with being a felon who had firearms, and he also had stolen mm-hmm. property. He was charged with 15 years and 15 probation. He will more than likely get out sooner than 15 years. Right. Now, if he decides to admit to something, then there you go. Then we have our person. But one thing's for sure, he didn't do this alone.
No, he's like, he's like so skinny and tiny. There's just no way Colt was bigger than him. There's no way.
Even if he did Colt alone, where is he? And where's Molly?
Right. Everyone seems to forget about Molly in this whole scenario here.
Right.
The truth.
Somebody
Let's talk about
rid
the
of
truth.
Both of them.
Where are they both? Correct. Where are their bodies then?
Exactly. Exactly. Somebody got rid of both of them. And I don't think it was one person. It could have been, but it couldn't have been if the person who killed Colt didn't have anything to do with killing Molly, then other people are involved.
Exactly.
It just doesn't make sense.
That's how you know there's more people involved.
Of course there are.
Exactly.
And this, you know, it's ridiculous, this whole situation.
Yeah. So, but it's interesting that this theory is out there because we've been sitting on it for a while.
Yeah.
We've been told by law enforcement to not mention it.
And here this guy
is. Multiple law enforcement agencies told us that, and we respected that because we didn't want to put that out there because it wasn't fully vetted out, and it's still not fully vetted out, but this blog has already blasted it out. And then we even called law enforcement after that and asked them, I go, are we okay to talk about this now? They go, yep, you can talk about it. It's out there because you guys didn't do it. So it's out there. So...
And the fact that he's saying that this is the truth and that he knows and he has the evidence, why does he have evidence for this?
He shouldn't.
Well, that's where, and the OSBI said they overshared with him. They did. It was direct quote, we overshared with him.
From Jackie?
Yeah.
So Jackie OSBI. Overshared with him.
Jackie and the OSBI overshared. Mm. They even said that. You know, because now it's like, at the time that he was just setting up an interview for them, for Khan, and now he became a client. So now it's like he's an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is he now? Is he their attorney or is he just their spokesperson?
I mean, how could he ever defend these people in court after putting out this document?
I mean, legally, could he?
He can't. Seriously.
Legally, could he?
He's made himself a witness.
Right. That's what I'm saying. He's saying he knows the truth. He has the evidence. Okay. Right.
I think it was a bad thing to do. It was just... I don't know the motivation behind it, but I'm not saying that creating a blog and talking about it is a bad thing to do, but the way this was done and the things that were said in it could have potentially blown this right out of the water, you know?
Yeah. No, we went so far as when we were talking to Jackie, when this all kind of came out, I go, should we stop the podcast? Should we stop it? Are you guys that close that, you know, we don't want to harm the case? And he said, no, don't stop. Just keep on doing the status quo.
Right.
So
interesting, because I just got an email from someone who lives in that area, who is consistently involved and has been watching this case from the get-go. And she just asked the same question.
Yeah.
She just asked. Let's read what she said.
No, I wouldn't do it.
Well, listen, she just asked the same question.
He asked the same question we did.
It's how is he going to be able to represent these people?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. But, you know, how did any of this happen? How did any of it get this far?
Well, we know how it got this far. It just wasn't taken seriously. And you have law enforcement related to the person who was involved in the chase. And they just decided even though they tried and they made it, what they thought was a good effort, there was no coordinated effort. I think this is a classic case. And we've said it before, where agencies and police departments aren't sharing information and they're not doing anything. And that's the only thing. That's one of the other things I agree with in the blog is, yeah, no one was sharing any information. Government agencies weren't sharing it with local agencies. Everybody was holding on to their own information. There's still a lot of information out there that people haven't seen. And I've been told that. So there's the things that a lot of people don't know that's out there, including this person who wrote the blog.
And sadly, that is not, that's the norm more than it is not. It, you know, sadly, law enforcement agencies, for whatever reason, have traditionally been shy about sharing information. And it just, it hurts everybody. But especially when you're talking about elected positions like a sheriff, I don't know if that has to do with it, that they want headlines. I don't know why it is, but I've found that just departments don't want to share with each other. And it's just not good. It's not a good way to do business, I don't think.
What's the rationale behind that? They just don't want leaks?
Well, you shouldn't be worried about leaks if you're sharing law enforcement to law enforcement. I mean, of course, there's always that worry, but I honestly think it's more of a numbers thing of they want the cases. They want the prosecutions. They want it, you know, they want the press.
Well, and on this case, after a certain amount of time, all the law enforcement were running away from this case.
Well, yeah.
They didn't want anything to do with it.
Because they wanted it to go away. I mean, if you can't make an arrest, you want it to go away. I don't think they had necessarily had bad intentions. I think it was just the way it started and the way business was done for so long. And then it was blown up in their face when it gained steam again.
It all came too close to home. All of this came too close to home for all of them. Yeah. So these people aren't strangers. They're not outsiders who came into their community and did something, and that they can capture them and prosecute them and get them out to their community. These are members of the community. These are people that people were related to. Because as we all know, how many people have we had in this podcast where they were just last week, this woman was related to both sides. Molly. I mean, it's crazy.
Incredible. Mm-hmm.
And she knew everybody. You know, her family knew Joe Russell. These are people who are institutions in their community that have been there forever. Right. And how do you not take them seriously? A lot of these people had no run-ins with the law, but they still knew. Because that was one of the other things that the blog was saying, that all the people that were saying bad things about Joe are all people that were probably arrested for drugs or something like that. None of the people that came on were.
Right.
You know?
And even if they were, again, they're the ones that are there. They're living the life. They know way more than we know.
Exactly.
On the outside. And exactly. And this group is a pretty tight-knit group that's involved in all of this. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just really frustrating. It's a frustrating case because we have to find them. I mean, I hate the thought that Molly and Colt are out there somewhere and somebody knows something.
Yeah. No, we agree.
Somebody knows something and they will not, you know, and they shouldn't be afraid at this point in time. Probably the best protection they could have is to come forward.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, and if Jesse was involved in this, then Godspeed. Go do what you got to do to prosecute him and find out why he did it.
Exactly.
But all the law enforcement I've spoken to about this so far say he couldn't have done it alone. So maybe he killed Colt.
And he couldn't have cleaned it up alone.
No.
Exactly.
He was insinuating, the blog was insinuating, they're laying in a creek bed somewhere waiting to be found.
That's Jackie.
Please, come on. They're not laying in a creek bed.
That's Jackie, and that's been Jackie's theory from the beginning.
And they could be. It hasn't been searched properly. We don't know. I mean, Jackie's been wanting to search that area for quite some time. He got denied that search warrant. And, you know, other people have searched that area, and human remains have come out as well. So it hasn't been properly searched, and that's what everybody's been saying from the get-go. It needs a proper search.
Yeah, difficult.
It is, because you can't get access. But I think that's going to change, hopefully, with the BIA involved. They can get access. Hopefully, they will search that area. But I think that's part of the plan.
I guess what I'm saying is, there is what I believe to be probable cause that they could be in that creek bed, or could it be part of a crime scene. Just have to articulate that properly in another search warrant and get access.
I agree.
I believe
that's going to happen. As far as Jesse's concerned, he's not going anywhere for a few years.
Yeah, right.
Which may or may not be good. It helps slow things down for the investigators if they feel like they have a prime suspect behind bars, but they still have to come up with bona fide proof that they can prove in a court of law, which is always going to be the problem with this case from the get-go, regardless if they find Molly and Colt's remains. Even if they found the remains tomorrow, they still got to prove who did it. Mm-hmm. And there's just we don't know how that's going to happen. We really don't.
We don't even know how they died.
Exactly.
You just don't know. There's all kinds of stories out there. We don't know how they died.
I know.
So it's going to be
if you want to play devil's advocate, you could say maybe they were partying, they both OD'd, and then people found them and said, what do we do with them? You know,
right.
There's that scenario. You have the scenario where Colt and Jesse got into a fight over him being disrespected, and, you know, Jesse choked him out. But based upon...
Jesse would have had to go get him in the woods to do that.
Yeah. Well, we don't know.
Or the next day.
We don't know where he was. And then
who got him out of the woods, though? He had a broken...
Well, that's what everybody's saying, but maybe he didn't have a broken leg. We don't know.
Right.
This is all basically what people are saying. This is what he was saying. I'm not even sure did he say that on the phone call?
Mm-hmm.
So he's saying that he broke his leg in the phone call. So if he had a broken leg, maybe that makes him easier to choke out. Who knows?
But they were moving. They were moving in there. They were pinging from different towers.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. So they were moving. You don't move around with a broken leg, or, and especially a compound fracture. I kind of always believed maybe they made that up to get people to come get them. But
possibly.
Maybe not. I mean, we just don't know. But I always found that to be kind of people just didn't, in the subsequent stories, I guess, I just never, people didn't mention that he was hurt.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot of questions.
Well, apparently, according to the blog, there's new information coming out. He's going to release some information out soon. So we'll have to find it. We'll have to wait. We'll just have to wait and find out what he's releasing. But I think we already know what it is. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we haven't released in this podcast.
Right.
That we've heard and we've vetted out, and we felt like it was irresponsible to start releasing that information. And this Jesse one was one that we knew was problematic because... law enforcement, we asked them, and they told us, don't say anything.
Right.
And so, but now it's out there. And we don't know what's going to happen next, and whether or not they have actual proof to make a formal charge. But it's going to be interesting. But
well, it'll be interesting if Jesse isn't the one, and now Jesse's being accused of it. And if Jesse knows something more, maybe he'll be more forthcoming about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's, we'll have to just wait and see. But, you know, I agree with you, Rob. We just want this solved.
Absolutely. That's always been the goal here.
I don't care who did it. Just, we want it solved, but...
we can only go with the information that's presented to us.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
And the main purpose to present that information is because there was really no one looking into this case anymore.
Right.
At the time that we did the documentary, no one was really looking into this case.
Right. And
as far as what happened to Joe with his missing, we had nothing to do with that. We didn't do anything like that. That was all law enforcement. That was an FBI investigation. It had nothing to do with us.
Right.
So,
well,
you know, and as far as Paul is concerned, that's all she wants. She just wants to find Molly.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
She really wants to find Molly, and it's just horrible for the family.
Well, it is. It is. It's just such a desolate area, and it would bother me. It would haunt me.
Yeah.
I don't think I could quit looking. And even this one, I'm not related. You brought me in on this.
We met on a totally unrelated type of thing. And exactly. I was curious after I saw your background and we started speaking, and I was like, I'd love to hear your take on this case with all your experience in investigating. And then it's hard not to get caught up in this because there's so many questions.
Right. I mean, there isn't a day goes by that I'm not thinking about this or looking at something else or dragging something else out. I just know the answers are there somewhere.
Yeah.
Yep.
I know they are.
Well, Jody, thank you so much for taking a look at this with us again.
Yep. We'll just continue going on, see what happens.
You know, it is what it is. Yeah. At this point.
Yeah. Let me know if you hear anything more, but you know, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing and seeing until I hear differently, just seeing if we can unearth something somewhere that will help, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks, Jody.
All right.
Next time on Partners in True Crime.
In the coming weeks, we have some exciting things happening. We have received dozens of requests from our audience to speak to the corruption in the county. We have heard dozens of stories of how people have suffered because of these abuses of power by elected officials.
We're going to be discussing some of these stories with locals and experts to help initiate some changes in the community. We're also going to create an open forum on the podcast.
We're going to have an episode that is completely interactive. We want to hear from you. What are your questions or thoughts on the case? What would you like to discuss with us? And do you have any information to share?
Please submit your questions or comments with your phone number on the website if you would like to be on the podcast or you would like us to discuss your question or comment.
You can submit this information confidentially directly on the podcast at the bottom of the first page where it says contact.
We look forward to hearing from you.
Partners in True Crime is launching an exciting new podcast, The Killing Hour with Doc Bond. Famous criminologist and author Dr. Scott Bond will be joining Rob and I on a deep dive into true crime and serial killers. It'll be an exploration into the mind of one of the world's most notorious serial killers, Dennis Rader, aka BTK.
We will be joined by special guests featuring BTK's daughter, BTK's prison guard, New York Times best-selling author and Emmy-winning filmmaker Mark Olshanker, the creator of Mindhunters, and more.
Join us every Wednesday as we investigate the sadistic dark world of serial killers to understand what makes them tick. Learn the signs of these psychopaths who walk among us, because how well do you really know anyone?
If you have any information regarding the case, please contact the BIA at www.bia.gov/BIA/OJS/missing-murder-unit.
You can also call their hotline with tips at 1-833-560-2065 and email them directly at ojs_mmu@bia.gov.
And if you want to text them with a tip, text keyword BIAMMU and send your tip to 847-411.
Check the Partners in True Crime website for this and any additional information.
If you or anyone you know is suffering from a methamphetamine addiction, please contact the American Meth Addiction Hotline.
If you or anyone you know has been the victim of sexual abuse, please contact the National Domestic Violence Hotline. All rights reserved. This has been a production of 722 Media Content. Please visit our website where you can subscribe to the podcast, find show notes, and listen to Vi's original song, Take Me Back, written for Molly Miller.